Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 552. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
It's been a crazy, it was a crazy travel weekend, with the, going to visit the parents, for their, 50th anniversary. I did pick up some future Belltime beers, which are not actually being consumed tonight, but, they will be in the near future. I think there's three Pennsylvania and one New York. It's kind of funny. Like, I see way more just Ohio beers, and maybe it's just because Columbus is in the middle of the state. When I go to a grocery store or a beer distributor, and I don't see as many out of state ones, but there's always a lot of Pennsylvania, New York, and Delaware for whatever reason when I go there. A handful of Delaware breweries sell in that area.
Cannot say I've ever had a Delaware beer before.
Hey, Dogfish Head?
Nope.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, that would be the flagship one as far as, you know, Delaware goes. The rest of them, are all kind of I don't want to say second rate, but name recognition wise, they're definitely second rate. I have one from right here in Ohio tonight. But hey, that's usually for the end of the show. Let's talk about what we normally talk about here on the Stunt Granny Audio's professional wrestling, mostly in the WWE. And this week, lands a square in NXT land because, I guess because they had the Worlds Collide event during Royal Rumble weekend, they decided to have a standalone weekend for the NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision. First time for an NXT TakeOver on a Sunday. Of course, there is no regular WWE pay-per-view on a Sunday in the month of February, with the Saudi Arabia Super Showdown show happening on Thursday the 27th. That also probably played a role in the decision to roll the dice on an NXT TakeOver on a Sunday night in Portland, not attached to a major WWE event, but still looked like they had a strong crowd in Portland and a very much talked about event on the WWE Network.
Unfortunately, I did not get to catch the first hour of the program, and still haven't really gotten around to it. So I missed a couple of good ones from what I've been told. But we were going to start the big news, I would have to say, is that those two matches were good. Pretty much all the matches up to the main event seem to be having everyone in the feels for NXT. Main event happened, and everyone got out of the NXT feels very quickly.
Yeah, no, I mean, not everybody, but certainly myself, and you can certainly chime in with your thoughts on it. It was a really good match in the very... It was actually going through a very good, you know, NXT style main event between two NXT style main eventers, Tommaso Ciampa and Adam Cole, and then it just turned into the most obnoxious game of can you top this I've seen possibly yet, and that includes all the Cole Gargano matches of, you know, taking a powerbomb through a table and then essentially getting right back up, and Destroyer on the floor, get right back up, and just constant big moves, near falls, outside ref bump, outside interference, and then Johnny Gargano turns on Tommaso Ciampa, even though they've only partially, you know, reconciled, turning heel for the second time in his career in a short time span as well, to cost Tommaso Ciampa his NXT Championship match against Adam Cole. Just so much went on in about the last 10-15 minutes of this match. It was absolutely numbing.
Well, yeah, that's there are like two, as you mentioned, there's two events that happened in the main event.
Yes.
And I am less cool and sympathetic to the match complaint, or I'm more in line with the match complaints that it got way too out of hand. You know, there's some point where there just needs to be a finish. And yeah, when you're taking a Canadian destroyer on the floor, as our good friend Steve Williams said, and you're in control less than a minute later, like, you know, it's over the top. Meow, meow. Well,
yes, I mean, there are certain things that, I mean, things can advance, they can progress, they can evolve, but, I mean, we grew up in an era where a DDT on the floor or a pile driver on the floor, that's an injury angle. We're not seeing that person for months after taking that. And it should still be that way. That's just, you know, complete head, neck impact on the concrete floor. That should be an injury angle. That should not be a transition spot in a match that's forgotten about a minute later.
Yeah, I mean, I always expect a certain amount of kickouts in big moves. And
yeah,
really,
that's
you know, any WWE match, you know, like, I don't think it's just NXT that does that, you know?
No. NXT takes it to a whole other level, but yeah, it is still, it's become the WWE style in the last decade, absolutely.
Yeah, just because, a lot of people have shifted from NXT to the WWE, so it's kind of just been hard not to permeate the product, at least some. Because, yeah, I don't think they do it as much on the main roster as NXT. Like you said, like, NXT is definitely more of a culprit in that department. And I guess I always find that kind of similar. Like, I feel like Strong Style is that way a lot of times, too. Like, because some of the moves sometimes in the Omega-Okada matches... Well, I mean, I guess they didn't have a spot like that, but sometimes the level of beating that they took, it got to be a little unrealistic in my view still, too. So, like, I don't know if there isn't a company that is completely guilt-free on this trend, in my opinion.
No. There really isn't. It's, you know, it's, and it's definitely something that it really needs to be scaled back.
Agreed.
You know, because, you know, we got head and neck injury, you know, potential. We've got just the continued numbing of the audience to big moves, not believing in near falls. Yeah, it can definitely do damage to the overall, you know, structure of wrestling matches if it continues to just to go in this direction. It is definitely time. Hopefully, the Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and everyone else at NXT is listening to some of the criticism at least, and deciding that, you know, it can be time to take some steps back here, because I just feel like, once again, I use the word, it's just absolutely numbing. I mean, one of the fallouts of this is I've seen a number of people on Twitter, you know, speaking, you know, nostalgically, whimsically about the NXT title reign of one Bobby Roode. There were spot fests on the undercard, but he would have a, you know, very good to great, you know, traditional wrestling matches in the main events, and it was a great change of pace from the car crash style of the undercard, and you know that's actually right. NXT is just becoming way too just way too much of the same style of wrestling, especially with the men's singles. Especially in the main event, and especially when we're in the main event.
I got a big kick out of, you know, I guess in some ways I don't understand the complaints about Gargano turning on Ciampa.
Because Gargano versus Ciampa is where a lot of this started, of just constantly having to constantly top yourself in every match and silly near falls and things of that of that nature. Plus it's just, you know, we're going on 2 years of this.
I guess that's one where I'm like, I feel like a lot of the people I saw criticizing it complain about long-term booking, and they've kept something going for this long and people are bitching about it. Is it too long?
Yeah, I do think it's too long, and I think it's time to move on from it. And I didn't particularly think the last time they went in this direction that Gargano made for a compelling heel. I guess he's going to get his chance now, but it just, you know, I think NXT needs to move on from Gargano, Ciampa, and Cole against each other in any capacity at this point.
I guess that's where I can kind of break it down in two ways. Like, I guess I don't mind the storytelling part of it. It's more of, I'm good without seeing these guys wrestle each other again part of things. Like, I get that the story's there, and I do think, just again, and I know I've said it before, but because I saw Gargano as a heel, most of his, you know, early run, I guess I always think that he has it in him to be one. I'm not sure that, and I agree with you that he wasn't terribly convincing the first go round, but I also think that they handicapped him a little bit by having his wife around.
That whole thing just got it. That is where. Okay, let's go back. At WrestleMania, at TakeOver New Orleans 2 years ago, they had the, you know, an all-time classic brawl where Gargano won. The babyface triumphed, and then they did a deal where Ciampa attacked him, so that led to another, you know, street fight type of match. Still very good to great, but not as good as the first. And then they went to, they had a last man standing match, SummerSlam weekend, that year. Not as good as the second match, and had the really bad, it was the really bad finish where Gargano cost himself the last man standing match by doing a really stupid thing and basically causing himself to get knocked unconscious.
Yeah, he basically did it to himself that match. Yeah.
Yes, and then there was the botched heel turn and everything. The whole Ciampa Gargano relationship dynamic getting just so convoluted, and then of course Ciampa's injuries stopped them from having the blow off last year that led to Adam Cole being put in his place, and then Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano had another three match series that just. The game of can you top this kept escalating until the debacle on Sunday.
I did start thinking of it, like I said, like where I'm just kind of tired of seeing these two against each other. And it made me think about something that was slightly earlier on the card there, like, Charlotte Flair really needs new opponents. And I honestly think that one of the best ways to do that is just to move her to NXT. Like, if they swap her and Shayna, like, I know that name-wise, Raw is kind of getting the short end of the stick. But I think it'd be good for everyone because she does, you know, both of them were out of matchups in their respective brands.
Right, yeah.
And Gargano and Cole and Ciampa are getting to that point where they're just, you know, they're out of opponents for each other, for themselves in NXT. Like, they either need to be moved or, you know, they just need to stay away from each other. Because, I mean, NXT's roster's probably big enough to keep them away from each other at this point.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, obviously, we're getting at least one more Gargano-Ciampa match WrestleMania weekend. And then, thankfully, that does mean Cole will need a new opponent. And I'm looking somewhere in possibly, you know, Velveteen Dream would be a, you know what? Either Dream, I don't want him to do Balor again, and a heel versus heel doesn't really work. So it would either be Dream or Keith Lee, you know, which would be champion versus champion. So probably won't go in that direction. So I'd go with Velveteen Dream after he's finished with the Roderick Strong feud on NXT TV.
And that seems like a pretty natural progression. And I do think that they've already mentioned that Dream kind of wants to settle a score with Undisputed Era kind of as a whole, which to me hints it moving on after Roderick Strong. I don't think he'll worry about Red Dragon all that much. And I know they're not really Red Dragon now, but I think everyone knows what I'm saying.
right.
Lord but knows. You know that that portion of the Undisputed Era.
Yeah, and then you know, Velveteen Dream. You know, not of the you know a complete WWE you know Performance Center and NXT creation. Not of the you know super indie style of working like Cole, Ciampa, and Gargano. More character work. It would definitely be a different type of match for Adam Cole in a takeover main event, and I think different is definitely what's needed here.
Yeah, and it would definitely seem like probably a good time to put the belt on Velveteen Dream, who is really I don't feel like they've done a whole lot at NXT as a whole on Wednesday nights. Like, I don't feel like they've done a lot more promos than they did otherwise. So there's
last Wednesday's episode I thought was more promo heavy than a lot of NXT episodes, and it was the right call. Heading into the go home for a takeover on a different night, and you know, I mean, I saw a lot of people even up to this weekend saying, "Oh, takeover's on Sunday."
the infamous, that's the other reason why I keep on laughing about the main event angle, is that Jeremy texted me Saturday night about that angle taking place, and when it came true, I just started laughing to myself about Gargano turning on Ciampa.
So have you talked to Jeremy since Sunday? Did he hate the match too?
No, he fell asleep before the match came on.
Gotcha.
So I'm not sure. I would assume he went back and watched it, but I have not received word about whether he liked it or not.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, NXT main event scene needs new blood. Honestly, after WrestleMania weekend, I would not mind if the entire Undisputed Era were to go to Raw or SmackDown. I know that's even because they're a group that leaves four holes, which is quite a bit. But they've just signed Killer Cross and Timothy Thatcher, and they've got other signings that they've made over the last few months. So they can certainly, you know, they've got plenty of talent to replenish talent that leaves. You know, the entirety of all of Undisputed Era have pretty much wrestled everyone on the NXT roster multiple times at this point. I mean, the tag team division without them it would suffer for a little bit while they rebuild, but you know they certainly have a great team to, you know, rebuild around in the Broserweights.
Yeah.
I mean, our complaining about the singles main event scene in NXT is certainly taking precedent here, but actually we missed if we didn't mention that. The tag teams and the women absolutely killed it on Sunday and have been killing it for some time.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of goes back to, and I mean, we could talk about it a little bit. Charlotte Flair popping up in NXT and giving Rhea Ripley natural selection fresh off of her victory over Bianca Belair. I think all of us have kind of expressed a what does Charlotte do kind of a thing. And I'm just sitting there going, you know, especially after she threw Bianca Belair into the stairs on her way out, I'm still either thinking a three-way match or Charlotte is really, you know, moving over to NXT to stay. You know, it would make sense if you want one of your big stars on, you know, the USA Network to maybe anchor that show.
You could go there. I'm not sure that Vince doesn't want his golden girl on the flagship show, even if she's just kind of treading water there. But I certainly see your point. I certainly think that there's certainly a lot you could do with Charlotte on NXT, or at the very least, in the coming months, she should spend more time on NXT. You know, whilst also maybe still being on Raw. A natural TV match, TV main event with her and Bianca Belair is very much there. Me personally, I'm less bullish on turning it into a triple threat at this point. I do think that they should just move forward with Charlotte and Rhea Ripley as a singles match, and, you know, and Bianca will certainly, you know, have her time.
Yeah,
but you could certainly do. You could certainly get a Charlotte Flair Bianca Belair match out of it in the interim, since we've still got, you know, 6 or 7 weeks to go here.
Yeah, that certainly could be another way to go, is to have some type of a number one contenders match between Bianca Belair and Charlotte.
I didn't say that. I mean, Charlotte has the match. She won the Royal Rumble. I mean, it's not.
Oh yeah.
Just a grudge match.
People have put that have put their chance on the line before.
Yeah, they have. You're not wrong. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Not to say that it will happen, but yeah, it works either way as a grudge match, or you know, if she puts up her spot.
Yeah.
Because I would expect that if it comes down to that type of an angle, I would be shocked if Charlotte lost, you know. That to me would indicate definitely that a singles match would be coming at WrestleMania. That would definitely change my opinion.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so does Charlotte end up, I guess in this scenario, does Charlotte end up losing to Rhea at WrestleMania then?
I would think she does. I would, yeah, I once again, you could have her win the NXT championship and move to NXT. But I think that they are definitely in the business of promoting Rhea Ripley and thinking that her look, her whole aesthetic, her whole the way she carries herself is a key to, you know, putting the cool factor on NXT and getting those younger demos. You know, and just really making her the big star of the NXT brand. It could go either way, but I'm thinking Rhea Ripley, you know, does beat Charlotte Flair.
Gotcha. And then I guess I missed it, but you were saying also on the NXT card, Dakota Kai, Tegan Nox. You thought it was a match of the night? I'm sure you can fill me in.
I absolutely did. And certainly if you haven't watched it yet, certainly go out of way to see it. And just a great, you know, street fight brawl. They didn't kick it off with the old collar and elbow tie. In fact, Dakota Kai jumped Tegan Nox as she was making her entrance, and it was just a fight through the whole match. A believable fight. They utilized what weapons they had at their disposal. No, it was certainly it was definitely a great match. Certainly, at least my favorite match on the show.
Yeah, that certainly gives me some reason to pop back in there to watch that hour of programming. And those two ladies have been really good. Like, I really like Dakota Kai a lot. Her heel turn has worked out well for her. Tegan Nox, you just keep hoping for both of them, who've had some injury issues, that they stay clear of those and they can continue definitely to do what they do very, very well.
No. As you know, with Dakota Kai's heel turn that she's knocking out of the park, that leaves Tegan Nox as the kind of shiny, smiley, babyface character on NXT. You know, obviously, previously they were both essentially playing the same character on NXT as best friends and tag team partners and kind of canceling each other out. So this has been a great opportunity for both of them to grow and, you know, truly recover from their injury situations and the unfortunate, you know, stops in both of their careers. Yeah, no, it's a good feud. I'm glad it's continuing. They've given Dakota Kai a heavy in Raquel Gonzalez, formerly Reina Gonzalez, as she was known in the Mayan Classic, and maybe some appearances on NXT TV where she was doing more enhancement type work. But they're gonna give her a push that gives an opportunity for Tegan to, you know, get herself a partner to have tag team matches going down. That's all really good stuff.
Yeah. So the ladies killing it for NXT. I guess you want to move along to Raw then, or is there anything else to be said about NXT overall? Because I think we've covered a fair amount.
Really, the only thing left on the NXT is the tag team title match. That was, another excellent match. A great way to kick off the Broserweights tag team title reign on NXT, which I, you know, wholeheartedly am all behind. The dynamic with Riddle and Dunn is great. It's funny in the right kind of wrestling comedy way, but they're both still ass kickers as well. So it's really good stuff.
It kind of reminds me, it's to me seems like the formula that they used with Cesaro and Sheamus, put two stars together and see how things go. Well, maybe not stars, but two guys that just aren't getting the singles push right now, and put them in a tag team so that they're not just sitting on the sidelines to all these championship matches. And yeah, it should work out pretty well. Like, they've their promos have been very entertaining, and just their whole interaction with each other has been quite funny.
Yeah, it is. It's a riot. So yeah, no. Good, just as I said, good stuff there.
Yeah, so that was also kind of the funny thing, I guess, about the event event altogether, is that everything was cool in the gang until the main event. So I'm trying to think of how long did it run for. 3 hours?
A little over 3 hours.
Okay, yeah.
It ended up being the runtime.
Yeah, so the first 2.5 hours went very well. That last half hour, 45 minutes, did not go so well. So yeah, it'll be interesting, and we hopefully will be back later this week to cover more NXT and AEW. Should the stars align, or at least that's the plan currently. But yeah, I guess it's something that's easy to forget, because it was even before Raw, which I kind of forgot about. It's still easy to forget about SmackDown these days.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, SmackDown definitely needs a jump start. And unfortunately, the jump start's not going to happen until after we get back from Saudi Arabia. Hopefully, the SmackDown roster gets back from Saudi Arabia this time. from that Thursday show.
Oh, yeah. Either that, or they realize that they just need to tape it and have it in the bank for that Friday.
Yeah, I don't think that's where they're going. I'm pretty sure that they have a live SmackDown scheduled for for the Friday in whatever town they're going to be in. Hopefully, it's a town with a hub airport.
Wow,
at the very
man.
Least,
that's just that is some brutal travel.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, I mean, that's just, that can't be good for your body in the long run.
No. I wouldn't think it is, but it is only a couple times a year that they do this now. Don't really know why they're doing it in February. I'm not a fan of them going there at all, period, for a number of reasons, but they did not need to sneak the show into WrestleMania season, because it feels like, you know, they're, you know, we're not they've had to cancel the fast lane this year, so we're not on the fast lane. It feels like we're making a real long pit stop here, because it's just kind of forcing, you know, most notably forcing the already past its expiration date Roman Reigns King Corbin feud to just completely limp on way past it, any usefulness.
Yeah, I like how it's a talking point in the WWE that the fans are tired of this feud, but we're still going to get more of it. It's just like, guys, come on here. Like, just stop. This thing's been going on long enough. It's gone from partial, well, I still waffle on Baron Corbin, but I've generally been up on him, but having this feud take place has done nothing for him, because he didn't win it, so that doesn't help, especially immediately after getting the King gimmick. Like, you need to win after you get the King gimmick to really help nail down the king gimmick and a reason that you get to brag. Like, you at least need a couple of wins under your belt is king before maybe running into a Roman Reigns type.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's and certainly heading into Mania WrestleMania season, Roman Reigns can't afford a loss. Really can't afford a loss here. So, you know, in the cage match, so you know Roman Reigns just gets to win again, and then they'll paths will cross again in the Elimination Chamber 2 weeks later. Or barely a week later, actually.
Wow. Wow, yeah, like 8 days later or something, 9 days later. Oh, man. At least you can hide that a little bit more. That would be a little bit easier to get around. Although I could also see Baron Corbin just, you know, taking a Superman punch and getting eliminated pretty much on sight. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's, yeah, just when I thought they were going, and this continues to be just a problem in the WWE on a consistent basis, whether I liked Baron Corbin or not, like, doing stuff like this to him is not doing him any favors.
No, it's not at all. No, and it's not doing Roman Reigns any the favor it was doing Reigns, at least in the beginning part of the feud, maybe up until Royal Rumble, was it gave Reigns this hated heel that no one could possibly cheer for. For for him to beat. But now it's gone on long enough, and it's just it's not a good match with each other. I mean, their false count anywhere match was as good a match as they're going to have against each other, and they've already had it. Confining them in a cage. I generally like cage matches, but putting two big dudes and confining them in a cage like that, it's not going to make for a good match.
Yeah, especially when they try to use their athleticism a lot. You know, there's the ring around the posy, ring around the post spot that Corbin does. There's the drive-by and a couple. I feel like Reigns does something else on the outside that, unless they go with a Hell in a Cell style cage, which I doubt, that, you know, encompasses the floor, it will kind of negate some of the stuff that makes both of them better big guy athletes.
Right, yeah, no.
So, yeah, I don't know why you go with that style match. Like, if Baron Corbin had been running away a lot, I would have understood it. He hasn't really been running away. So, you know, I'm not completely sure why this stipulation is the one chosen. Other than the WWE felt like running that angle.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think of what else there was. I'm kind of looking, scrolling through SmackDown, because, I mean, is it worth mentioning Bill Goldberg taking on Bray Wyatt? Is there anything to be talked about there?
Nothing really until them. Well, I mean, Goldberg will be at SmackDown on Friday, so we'll see what kind of angle they final, you know, go home angle they do for that, and then it's do they you know is the what chance there is of them going with a Goldberg victory?
Yeah. Because we either got, I guess we did discuss that, the Goldberg Reigns or Reigns Wyatt at WrestleMania possibilities.
Yeah.
So I guess it is kind of a wait and see thing until then.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously understand the thought process behind not beating the Fiend before WrestleMania and going all the way with it to WrestleMania, and then you know whatever happens there is what happens. But if they do want to keep bringing Goldberg back, he can't keep losing either.
Oh.
So unless they're prepared for this to be the last time they bring Goldberg back. They break that glass. He's not Goldberg isn't Goldberg if he loses all the time.
This is 100% true. Yeah. I guess I don't. I guess it's another one where the nostalgia appeals are still something that to me I don't completely get into. Like Goldberg's in great shape, but his matches have still just been Goldberg matches. And as much as I might think that it's cringy to be in control after a Panama Sunrise on the outside, I guess I don't find anything special about a Goldberg match either. So neither are terribly enticing to me, despite being completely different.
Gotcha.
Wow, man. They only had 3 matches on SmackDown?
Yeah. Oh, well, we can talk about that a little bit here, too.
Holy shit.
There was like an hour between matches on SmackDown. If I had paid to go see that show, I would be furious.
Wow. Like, I guess it didn't obviously dawn on me. I felt like I had gotten through it very quickly when I watched it. And now knowing that there was only 3 matches, that 100% explains that I definitely got through that quickly. Holy smokes. That is not a lot of in-ring action.
No, it is not.
Wow, especially... that was Monday. Mildly more interesting to me. did you expect the quick execution of Eric Rowan's push this Monday?
I didn't really I wouldn't say I expected it, but when they announced him versus Black, I kind of felt like, you know, I feel like they're going to protect Black more, and that's what they did. No, I don't know if they're going to completely, you know, give up on Rowan and never have the reveal of what's in the box, or if they're going to, or if that's still going to be in play. They definitely, you know, in Rowan's first match against a name opponent, he just lost, you know, since coming to Raw as a solo.
Yeah, I mean, they had him as a tough out because at least Black had to give him 2 black masses, one while Rowan's on his knees to put him out. So they at least protected him a little bit in that, you know, he wasn't finished off just with a regular finisher. So that is at least something. But yeah, I guess I was a little bit surprised, but I don't care either if just because I'm not that interested in what's in the box. And I think that Rowan seems to be a fine wrestler. Like, he's another guy that I don't completely understand why they haven't pulled the trigger on him at some point. Like, it's one of those things that I find interesting when they have these start and stop pushes that they do. Like, it's, you know, it's always a thing. But it always makes me interesting to figure out what's going on behind stage, what they don't feel like the person is doing right to warrant a continued push. I don't feel like they get into some of that stuff all that much, but I'd be interested to see the talent evaluations in that instance.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, they have not let Aleister Black lose since he started on this Knock on My Door campaign, but they haven't done anything with him either, really. There's been no progress on this. There's no title challenge on the horizon for him. It's just another kind of empty, meaningless feud that's going to wait him.
Yeah, and I don't know what they do with him either. You know, because is Andrade the U.S. champion? I always forget the secondary title is on Raw. Is he U.S. or IC?
Andrade is U.S. right now, while still being suspended.
Right, so I mean, that would be the category that you'd put Aleister Black in. Like, I definitely don't see Black bumping the whole way up to, you know, the WWE Championship for WrestleMania. So the only thing that could be on the horizon to me is Andrade when he gets back. But that guy seems to have more than enough problems on his hands, even if it just means more Latino on Latino violence.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they got this whole thing. He's got still has Rey Mysterio after him. He's got Humberto after him. He's got to figure out what's going on with Angel Garza and Zelina Vega. If she's trying to push him out of the equation, yeah. The U.S. title situation on Raw is already ripe for a WrestleMania fatal four-way that may or may not make the main show.
Yes. So by all means, throwing in Aleister Black would seem very odd into that situation. So yeah, it's weird. Like he doesn't even have anything on the horizon for WrestleMania. Like, I know that someone on his level, they aren't normally planning for them quite yet, but it's kind of hard to see where they go with him at this point. Like, it's so wide open and right. Not a good way. what else, I guess, I'm trying to remember what else was interesting from Raw, and, I guess it would be the flattening of one Matt Hardy.
Yeah, that was a definite, I think they're done, they're finished writing him off at this point. I think they are. Unless he shows up next week in a full body cast, but...
Unless they go full Wile E. Coyote on this angle.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, it was... I mean, it was effective. I mean, it went on long enough, and Matt Hardy's just not beloved enough by himself that the crowd didn't start to turn into sadistic assholes.
Yeah,
at least the 18 to 34 year old male demographic, you know, maybe 18 to 45 year old male demographic, it definitely they got that close up shot of the crying child, so it worked in that regard.
I think the crowd was almost more the takeaway from that match or that angle for me than anything else, because I'm like, why are these sick fucks cheering? Like I kind of get that violence is cool, but it's just like, Nah, this guy's just being a dick now. Like, what? Why are you agreeing with him? Randy Orton has done a good job of portraying the over-the-top violence on both Matthew Hardy and Edge. So I approve of what they're doing, but they're doing it as effectively as they can to draw the line between right and wrong here. Just because the fans don't take the bait, it kind of throws things off.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, as I said, I don't know if the crowd has the emotional connection with Matt Hardy. You know, by himself without Jeff to really make this resonate. And people who have been old enough and who've been watching and following this long enough know the history with Matt and Edge. So it rings hollow to a more older, more cynical fan base.
I mean, I think it's one of those ones where it's almost similar to a Brock Lesnar situation where you need to fill time because he's not going to be there every week. And after what Randy Orton did, thankfully they have kept Edge off TV in the meantime, which is wholly appropriate. And, you've got to fill it in some way. And despite Matt Hardy maybe not being the best person to stand up for Edge, he told a good enough story about, because I even think that he's mentioned that those times are, that Matt Hardy had said, those times are behind us. Like, we had our problems, but we've kind of settled them. So at least on the mic, I feel like he's covered his bases. And, Randy Orton needed something to do for a few weeks. And, this match wasn't going to take place at Elimination Chamber. So it's no surprise that it honestly wouldn't be a surprise to me if Edge comes back at Elimination Chamber to possibly cost Randy Orton whatever match he might be in. Whether
like that. I don't know if Randy will even be in a match. I could see them involving Christian in the storyline and having Christian confront Randy Orton. I think that's the big thing to kind of build to before Edge comes back. No idea what the situation, the medical situation is with Christian, and whether that he's allowed to take any bumps. Who knows anymore? But yeah, I think that's the one that will have the more emotional resonance than the man whose life Edge destroyed.
So hopefully they can get something like that going. If not, maybe Randy Orton will just go to NXT and attack Beth Phoenix in the announce booth. then we should get some real venom out of the situation. The Monday Night Messiah gimmick for Seth Rollins. The guy just seems to revel in the heel antics. And I guess I, for one, am glad that that Seth Rollins is back on that side, because though the WWE didn't do a good job with his babyface run, they seem to be into this angle with Seth Rollins much better than anything on that end for him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been good for him. He's definitely a much better heel. He's a much better promo than the last time he was a heel. Regularly on Raw, it's good to have his heel stable with him. This week was a little bit more of a down week for both them and then for Raw in general, because, you know, just the kind of the same stuff with Owens and the Viking Raiders. No Samoa Joe week. No mention of Samoa Joe's. Don't know what's going on there. But then going to another combination of those, you know, eight men going at each other in the main event, starting to feel a little repetitive. But they did involve the Street Profits in it in the end, which kind of hilariously put the the heels at a man disadvantage, which isn't usually typical in these situations.
There really shouldn't be. I guess you could extricate someone from that situation if you wanted to. Just leave the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits in there to deal with them. Someone's going to need to take those title belts off of Murphy and Rollins, because I don't think that's going to be a long-lasting thing.
No, and and the Street Profits do have the title shot at Super Showdown next Thursday, yes.
Oh, okay.
That was announced after Raw. So they could certainly go with a title change there. Because we're still left with... You know, and this is actually, as I said, it felt a little more repetitive this week, but they still have not, in the flurry of tag matches we've had since, you know, in the last couple of months, we still have not had a Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins singles match on a Raw or a pay-per-view. It's actually kind of impressive that they've had that level of patience.
With that level of patience, I would think they'd be able to make it to WrestleMania without having that feud.
They definitely be a good match for both of them at WrestleMania.
I guess, is there anything else on... on Raw, I guess, do we want to talk about Becky Lynch on Raw, throwing around some dollar bills, y'all?
Yeah, I didn't. I was not a huge fan of that one. It just didn't feel like a genuine thing that she would have done in that situation. There was no reason for her to go on about paying fines for what she does when she gets her old Shayna Baszler. It just seemed really, it just seemed like an idea someone had based on an angle from years ago, and then didn't quite execute it right. Especially since once the money was on the ground, you could see how many ones there were.
I mean, you just should go with fake money if you're gonna put ones on the ground.
Yeah,
I don't care if they were Becky Lynch bucks, which, you know, go fool Okada bucks on that situation. It probably would have been more entertaining if she would have done that, honestly, than putting ones on the ground. Yeah, it was a little cornball-y what she went with. Like, I haven't had a problem with her leaning into the man persona and getting more cocky since the Asuka wins. But yeah, this one was a little. It was definitely a bit of a miss on her part. But this is another one where they've got a lot of time for this feud to last until WrestleMania. So I would imagine a few more weird twists and turns as we move along.
Yeah. What is your take on the situation of having Shayna have to earn the title shot by going into the Elimination Chamber and thus making the Women's Elimination Chamber match the winner a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the problem is that the outcome seems like a foregone conclusion. You know, it's an easy way to keep Lynch and Baszler apart for the time, so I understand going that direction. But yeah, I mean, I don't even care who the other five ladies are because, well, I guess what? Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan are two. Like, I'm trying not to look it up.
Yeah.
So that's three. And I'm trying to think of who the other three were. Because was that all Raw or was that both brands?
All raw. Sorry, all raw.
Oh. Well, I'm kind of blanking on who that was going to be. So, and I guess it's not that big of a deal either.
I can tell you. I can tell
Oh.
you. I remember.
Okay. Who are the three that I'm forgetting there? Or
Asuka,
oh.
Natalya, and Sarah Logan.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know why I forgot about Asuka since she had a promo about it. It was fully amused that the ladies' tag team titles will be taking a back burner status again for a while. Not that I don't think that I mean Asuka and Kairi Sane are very capable singles wrestlers. So it's that's not my problem. I guess those women's titles feel like they've well, they're like any other tag team titles in the WWE at this point.
Right.
They just kind of get ignored when it's convenient. And I forgot that it was going to be a whole Riot Squad reunion in there.
Yes, and we've got Ruby and Liv at each other's throats, and Sarah Logan kind of in the middle. Sarah Logan has had almost no character development since the breakup of the Riot Squad. Only essentially being on Raw because they needed a body for the Women's Survivor Series match, and then to do a quick feud with Charlotte Flair that she lost decisively.
Yeah, she has not had a whole lot to bite into. Because I feel like she changed up her look a little bit, and I even feel like she's probably training differently. Because to me, her physique looks different.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
Yeah, because I mean, she spent a lot of time off TV for reasons that I don't really know, and I don't really care either. but it did seem like she kind of remade her physical appearance a little bit with, I would assume, training regimen. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect anyone from the Riot Squad to win that match in the first place. Like,
No.
and it would be re it's really hard when they don't have the champion in those matches to not telegraph the winner. Like, when a champion's in there, there's always that chance that they lose the belt and we get some type of, return feud at WrestleMania, or that just kind of kills whoever's championship reign that is, and that person moves into a new feud, moving into WrestleMania. Yeah, so I guess I always find it weird the number one contenders matches in those situations I feel like are a little more telegraphed than the other situations. Do you have any additional thoughts on that topic that I didn't cover?
No, not at all.
Okie dokie. Is it time to wrap this puppy up then?
I think it's bell time, beer time.
Well, this week, I still had a little bit left, and it was a little bit on the low carbonation side, which is all on yours truly, but I will still talk about it. I took the picture of it last week. It is the Crooked Handle Brewing Company, Wee Bit O' Trouble. It's a Scotch Ale / Wee Heavy at 9% and 20 IBUs. This is multi-tastiness at its best. If you like hops, do not come near this beer because you will not taste them. And it's a glorious thing. I like a nice ruby-colored beer that has a nice twinge of sweetness and just enough hops in there to not make it too sweet. So this one's out of Springboro, Ohio. I got it when I went to go visit the in-laws. I always try to pick up some beers wherever I head to, and I know that there will be a number of drives this year that I am looking forward to getting beers at said location. You know, Cleveland will definitely be one to look forward to in that regard. So, yeah, Bell Time Beer of the Week. I'm at DeFrango11. He's at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.